Welcome to Identities and Perspective of the European in the Middle East and the Middle Eastern in Europe. This is Valeria, 30 years old, Italian, and currently living in Turkey. And
Zeynep, a 33 years old Palestinian Syrian Lebanese who was born and raised in Turkey.
How did we come together? A wide group of actors want to make the difference in the MENA region. Who are we and why are we here? Check it out.
So, this is Zeynep. We are six siblings and I'm the youngest one. Three of my sisters were born in Beirut. After the civil war, my parents decided to move to Syria, where my mother was born. Then my brother and another sister were born. When my father couldn't take the political oppression and Hafez's dictatorship anymore, with his Palestinian identity, of course, he decided to move to Turkey, where the kids would grow up in a safer place and would have Turkish passports instead of Lebanese, Syrian, or Palestinian ones. The year they moved to Turkey, which was in 1987, I was born. For a long time, I thought I was like one for being born in Turkey. At least on paper, I was not different. But still, when the other kids at school or in the neighborhood somehow found out that I was an Arab, they used to ask me questions like, "Do you eat with your hands? They say Arabs are so dirty, are you?" I remember getting so angry and yelling at them that I was a Turk and I was born in Turkey. For a long time, I named myself as a Turk and rejected my Arab identity. At the age of 25, when my dad passed away, I realized how lonely we were in this country. That was the moment I began to make search, try to understand what happened to my family, traveled to Yafo where my dad was born, and traced back as far as I could. So what have I found so far? My identity is like a patchwork dress, and I like to wear it. Even if it can be challenging sometimes, since I constantly have to fight for each patch to exist. My sexual orientation and lifestyle are not accepted by neither Turkish or Arabic society, so I have to fight for it. I can hear racist jokes or speeches about Arabs, especially refugees, literally every single day, so I have to keep my guard up and fight against it. When I meet some Arabs and they learn that I'm an Arab too, most of them tell me how great Erdogan is or start to make all these anti-Semitic jokes. I have to put my guard up again. So I have been on streets in protests in different activist groups in Turkey fighting against racism, anti-Semitism, xenophobia, homophobia, transphobia, misogyny for the last 8 years. I protest on the streets or teach in the classrooms with my Palestinian, Syrian, Lebanese, Turk, Middle Eastern, a bit Western, queer women identities. Yeah, that's me. And so, Valeria?
Well, I'm Italian and I've lived most of my life in Italy before a sudden choice, despite pondered probably my whole life of leaving everything behind, which turned my world a bit upside down. Part of the life that I've chosen, having to live abroad and in places that differ greatly in culture and costumes, whether, you know, religion has a vital and a central role in society, is trying to understand and embrace communities for what they are. To me, as Valeria, this doesn't apply only to my work sphere, but also to my private life, as I've always tried to emerge in a culture fully. Respecting it for me means also understanding it, living it, make it part of my daily life, or, you know, at least in the broader sense, consider it in my development. Within my time in the Middle East, I've passed from different places, but I stayed longer in Turkey, long enough to breathe its language, its tradition, as well as its limitation, its contradiction, its nationalism. The latter impacting greatly on the perception that I have of the community and the way I live with them, meaning the way I speak or I behave. Living in Turkey with my condition and also being doubled emerged in subcategories of the community. One of them, the Syrian community, which now represents a wide number of the population, especially in the border areas. In the last year, surprisingly, as international tends to maintain their standards and their own company when it comes to pillars of life, I have fully embraced this community's tradition. In my free time, I've sat at a table with men, and in the rest of the time, we're not as open-minded as they would seem sitting with me. I've confessed my secrets to you, women in burqa, which were, you know, sharing a movemental dance in all women venue. And I've chosen a Syrian fiancé with whom I share so many differences, but I also share the honesty. And I feel he's Western, if that means anything, as much as I am Eastern, Italian, as much as I am Syrian. I feel that those who have been sharing the same or similar degree of involvement with the communities, regardless of loving relations, have had to undergo a sort of feeling, if not a syndrome, which I call the one of not belonging. It goes more or less like this. When your experiences are so deep to the point that they radically change your life and your way of considering things around you, you might experience a feeling of non-belonging, which doesn't apply only to the new places that you explore, you know, and that somehow become home, but also to your inner home, the logistic and spiritual one, if you want to call it like that, that once represent your shelter, your point of reference or return. In this extension to the other, I kind of lost my point of reference. Maybe it's a blessing to not belong if I go back to the one that used to be my shelter. This is the element that hit me the most in my experience, in my situation. What about you, Zeynep? Did you find this element familiar? Both, if yes or not, do you also have a particular element to you that you experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was when I began to dig in my family's history and realize that my identity is far beyond what it says on my Turkish ID card, that I felt I belonged nowhere. And interestingly, that was when I felt free, as I had never been before. I must also admit that not belonging to anywhere can sometimes be challenging. It's not always very easy, especially nowadays, since 4 months ago, I moved to Germany. Just another country in my identity now. So I moved to Germany with my German-Brazilian partner because I couldn't take the political oppression and Erdogan's dictatorship anymore. Sounds so familiar, like my dad did actually. So it's like family tradition now. So anyways, the last 4 months have been a bit hard for me, to be honest. I started to think about my identity more, and it also gave me a chance to see things from a different perspective. Since my activism and anger against injustice are big parts of my identity, starting a new life here in Europe and trying to find new communities and be part of them have not been that easy. Last week, for example, I was in a protest on the day of elimination of violence against women. And last year, actually in Turkey, we were on the streets as thousands, even if we were not allowed to be, and we were attacked with tear gases by the police. So, of course, I was quite sure that wouldn't happen here. We would still be on the streets and maybe some police would stand around without intervention, though. And it was like that, of course. However, protesters, except the Kurdish people or immigrants or refugees, didn't seem angry to me. And that was very, very interesting and kind of disappointing, actually. As if German women were all safe and had equal rights with men, and they were there only to be in solidarity with the minority groups. Of course, I talked to my friends about that. So that could be due to the corona, but actually I just got the answer that is how it happens, actually. So, the feeling that I got was as if German women were all safe, but that's not the case. Because then I just made some research on that. And then I just found out that one woman in every 3 days is killed by a husband, partner, or ex-partner here in Germany. And there's plenty of evidence that domestic violence is a huge problem in Germany too. Women's shelters, for example, are at full capacity. Each year, thousands of women need to be turned away because there's not enough space, because shelters are underfunded or not accessible to all. Women in Germany are still paid 21% less compared to men in terms of average gross hourly earnings. So that was quite surprising to me, because that's now, like, I start to think about that. And that's why I also asked Valeria about how the situation is in Italy. So do you want to share it, Valeria?
Yeah, well, surely, before going into the data as well, I can say that I've noticed as well this about my country, that we go out only for football matches. There's no a way of protesting. Yes, this topic, it's very well known to women in Europe. But you always see a very few going down and fighting for their rights and asking for more legislation. Indeed, 2020 violence in Italy has been quite significant. ISTAT, which is our, statistic institution, indicated that the calls made to the anti-violence support, because we have an anti-violence support number, which is, I say it for who is listening and is in Italy, 1-2-1-5-2-2, recorded in the period comprised between March and April 2020, that the phone calls were more than 5,000, which means 75% more than in 2019 in the same reporting period. Also, in the period comprised between March and June 2020, the number of calls, both via chat and to the anti-violence support number, had doubled if compared to the same period last year, passing from 6,956 to more than 15,300. So looking at the femicides within this year, the number so far indicated that one woman killed every 3 days, which is a shocking number, with a total of 91 victims in 2020. And yet we are not finished.
Yeah, and like I also, that was also interesting to me, because we know that Merkel is the chancellor of Germany, and like, yeah, a woman is the chancellor, and she's like one of the strongest leaders in Europe, in the world. But in German parliament, 31% of the members are women only. And that is the same number with Sudan. So that was like really, really interesting. The case in other strong European countries are not different, so as you said. And the other interesting thing is many Europeans like pointing out the mistreatment of women abroad or the immigrants when they are far from perfect themselves. So the question here is like, why, when it is possible to go out and protest without getting attacked by the police or the government, that women choose not to go out? Of course, there are protests. Of course, we see that in other, like in European countries, there are protests happening. That's not the case. But when we compare the potential and the opportunities and the conditions, I just feel like there must be more, not only to stay in solidarity with the countries that are not as developed or that women have worse conditions, but also for themselves, right?
Yeah, this is a very important point indeed. There are many women in the Arab world who are incredibly strong and motivated, and I've met many here. And this is often surprising to the Western world, both to its women and to its men in general, so to the Western community, because of the reason that we might know, the culture, the fact that they think that women are subjected to a certain treatment. But the reality is that strength doesn't come from the context. Neither from your clothes. It's an inner power that makes all human to be defined, strong or not. This might be more important when it comes to having the opportunity, as you were talking about, in presence of government that strongly respect democracy, and citizens have opportunities, numerous opportunities to dissent, to ask for better. So why do not we see people in numerous countries, which that's permitted, rising for their rights? Rightly, we never want to be judged when we dress in a certain way because clothes do not define us. But then why do we feel entitled to judge others and to think that that will define their power, that will define their willingness, that will define what they want? The word is currently being eaten by individualism, and there is a sort of otherization between the Western and the Eastern world. I think the example provided by you is a sample to our communities. So like this, I think we want to conclude, where does the individualism and the classification come from? And is it this reflection to make us, is this a spark to make us reflect on the fact that maybe we don't rise for the others because we don't rise for ourselves? I think this is food for thought for the next episodes to come.
We hope that left some question marks in your minds. That was our aim, actually, to make you question that too.
So thank you very much for staying with us. We were Valeria and Zeynep, and this was Identities in Contrast. Goodbye.
Bye.